The views and opinions expressed by the guests of the Inspira podcast do not necessarily represent the official policy or position of any agency of the United States government or any organization, public or private.
One, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to the Inspira podcast, hosted by your girl, me, Erica Mueller Chen. I'm an international development specialist with over a decade of experience leveraging the amazing power of sport to promote peace and positive social impact. My career has allowed me to live in Europe, Southern Africa, and Latin America. In 2022, I accepted an offer for my dream job in sports diplomacy. And I also became an employee family member to a U.S. diplomat, aka an EFM. This podcast is all about inspiration and career advice. Each episode, I'll interview an inspirational global changemaker working in sport for development, social impact, or the diplomatic service. This series is perfect if you have interest in breaking into one of these sectors. Or you've already landed that dream role and are keen to learn from thought leaders. Enjoy today's episode and stay inspired.
Just being on a playing field, women talking about the empowering experience of playing is so different than the experience of a man. Perhaps a boy who has that access to just step outside of his house and play cricket in the streets. Pakistan is a country of boys playing cricket in the streets everywhere you go. But girls don't have that kind of freedom or luxury.
Welcome, friends. Today's special guest is Sana Mehmood. She is a multi-sport athlete and sport for development expert, currently working as a program manager at Right to Play International in Pakistan. Sana is the former captain of the Pakistan national women's football and basketball teams, having represented the country in several international events. She is also an alumni of the Fulbright program, through which she completed a master's in international development studies in the United States with a focus on sport, gender, and development. And finally, this is a fun fact because it's related to the new job I'm starting soon, Sana. You were the first ever sports envoy in Pakistan, which are elite athletes who use their platform to promote cross-cultural understanding and sports diplomacy for the United States Department of State, Sports Diplomacy Division, in collaboration with Pakistan, of course. So lots of amazing things going on there. I'm so thrilled to speak to you. How are you today, and where are you calling us from?
Hi, Erica. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for that very kind introduction. I believe, yes, I'm very proud of being one of the few first women who were part of that group of the Sports Envoy Exchange. And I learned a lot, and I feel like some of the things I learned during that trip have been life-changing for me and have been the reason why I'm doing the work that I'm doing today. So I'm always appreciative of my time in the United States, but also that experience that I got during that exchange program. And thank you for highlighting Pakistan, which is where I'm based and which is where I'm calling from.
Well, my pleasure. And one thing I like to do before we jump into our conversation, Sana, is to mention why my guest inspires me, because I've called this podcast Inspira. And you really inspire me for lots of different reasons, but especially because of the different perspectives that you bring to this sport for development conversation and to Right to Play's Pakistan portfolio. Because as we mentioned, you have been an elite athlete, and you also bring this gender lens through which you've studied academically. In addition to that, you have these international collaborations and exchanges that you've participated in. And finally, and perhaps most important to what we're talking about, you really have the local Pakistan context and knowledge. And so I just feel like those different viewpoints that you're bringing to the conversation are so interesting and so important. And I really feel inspired by that. And I'm looking forward to learning how you've brought those all together today.
Thank you. Thank you, Erica. Thank you so much.
Before we start to talk about your personal and professional journey, Sana, I'd love to invite you to educate me and the audience on any key information that might be helpful for us to know about Pakistan, whether it's historical context or culture, or just how sport comes into this conversation.
So Pakistan is interestingly, I find it to be perhaps over a little over 15 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, people didn't even know it existed. Very frankly, I remember on a trip to the United States with my family in 98, we would come across other tourists, we would talk, and they would ask us where we're from, and they would often confuse it with India, that being the more bigger country with a more international media as well, and of course the great Bollywood films that we all are familiar with. And then over time, Pakistan has come into the radar, unfortunately, for very negative reasons because of a lot of the Talibanization and Islamization, also bordering Afghanistan. It has come into the Western media in a very negative light. And so now everybody knows us as that extremist kind of Muslim nation. And it's unfortunate because Pakistan is a country of a lot of talent. We have a population of like over 220 million people, probably the sixth most populous in the world, which is not something I'm proud of, but I'm trying to talk about the sheer capacity of a nation in terms of just human resource and how much potential that could hold, even if it does pose huge challenges at times. And more than 100 million of those people are women, and young women and girls who have a very important role to contribute to society. And Pakistan gained its independence from the British in 1947, which also makes us a fairly young country with like over 75 years. And we have a lot to do, and because we have dealt with a partition and a separation, and trying to get independence from our colonial masters, we had a lot of time to focus on restructuring and rehabilitation, and much was lost in all of that chaos. So it's still a very, very developing country. It's still a country that is under-resourced in many aspects. It is also growing in a divide or segregation between the haves and the have-nots. There is a significant majority living under the poverty line, and like many such countries, women and girls unfortunately fall in the more marginalized groups with other minorities. So definitely, the development sector is needed here, is also thriving here, and part of my motivation to step into the sector was because, as you said, growing up in a country like Pakistan and knowing all the things that we must do to reach the sustainable development goals and to be a better community. And for me, with keeping that sport passion in mind, sport for development was the way to go. And I think sport in general, as a developing country, hasn't developed to the advanced or more developed nations in the world. We are far behind in many elite sports in the Olympics or in national competitions. Our country has never been part of a FIFA World Cup, for instance. So from that, you can get a sense of sport in general is quite underdeveloped. And so resources, investment, and even attention given to development of sport is quite less. And so sport for development programs can be even more tricky because getting that acceptance of sport and participation in sport can be tricky from communities. So we are still working on it, even though sport for development is a new concept, relatively new concept, over 20 years old in the rest of the world. In Pakistan, it's even fairly, newer, because we are still developing sport in general.
Thank you so much for those insights. It's really helpful for me and hopefully for others listening just to have a little bit of that at the back of our mind, especially as we start talking about the gender dynamics and, as you said, the development sector and just how that takes shape in your local and national context. Now, Sana, I'd love to know more about your own journey. specifically your sports career journey and any steps that led you to Right to Play or to sport for development more generally?
So I grew up in the capital city of Islamabad, and I am quite aware of my privilege, having lived in a city which has all the resources, and to have parents and a family that have always been supportive. So I got the best education, I believe. I studied in a co-education environment. I was able to pursue higher studies, thanks to the State Department because I was on a Fulbright scholarship. I think that that shaped my experience as a more privileged person in Pakistan, but who could understand then the dynamics of the less fortunate. And I think seeing that huge gap is what led me to want to work in the development sector, and that's where what I pursued. Very early on, I got involved in sports. And again, I was lucky enough to be one of those girls who studied at a convent here in my city. And at the time, it was very, very novel to have sports events and annual school sports gatherings, especially for girls. So I think that love of sport came from the school as well as my parents being very active and encouraging outdoor activities. So I was into it from the start and was lucky enough that I landed up in the eyes of coaches who knew people and who were able to guide me to a path to pursue the sport. And once I got into the club level sports and I started playing with the professional team, I understood the whole universe that existed away from people who weren't into it. So it's not covered a lot by mainstream media. It's not given a lot of attention, and female sports are even more marginalized than other sports. So girls really don't even know where they have to go if they want to play. So I was lucky to find that avenue and hold on to it. And luckily also made captain of both national teams at various points in my career. I think that passion for the game and realizing there was a time when I realized that there's something different about the girls who play sport. And I noticed that in the girls around me on my team, the ones we played against. We traveled a lot, so we met people from across the country and even people from other countries. And I just felt like girls in sport were standing out. And not necessarily because of their education or because of the way they spoke or the way they looked. It was because of this unsaid confidence that they exuded. Their body language was completely different. And I decided to study more about this. So I did my undergraduate thesis on the impact of sports on the self-esteem of sportswomen in Pakistan. And in all those interviews, what I found was how sport had built that agency and allowed them this platform to negate gender stereotypes, to bring themselves in the public space, and conduct themselves in a manner that was giving them even more confidence and reinforcement of their own abilities. And then just as obvious as it may seem, but playing sport on the field physically was empowering. You realize the things that your body can do that perhaps you've never imagined it doing before until you push it and test it to those limits. So after that, I think I was 100% sure that sport has a greater power. This is not just, we're not just doing this for fun. These games, all of it means so much more, especially for women. The women's game is always going to have more complexities and nuances than the men's game. Even elite athletes will tell you today, how being a female athlete is so much more different than being a male athlete. There are just so many more dynamics to it. And realizing that, I started researching and I found a plethora of information, organizations that were doing this kind of work, and including Right to Play. And that was the day when I said, one day I want to work at Right to Play, because it felt very aligned. It felt like everything that I believed in, everything that I was experiencing as a woman, as an athlete, somebody else was using that. And, giving it to other girls. It was like sharing the joy of sport with other young women and other children and helping them derive that learning and that fun from it, having that lifetime experience. I've always wanted to keep my a professional life and my sports life together, and it's worked really well. Right to Play has given me that platform where I enjoy my job so much. You know, I'm one of the lucky ones who do, and because I really believe in what we do, and I believe that it works. I've seen the impact, but I've lived the impact as well. So that's why I'm in sport for development. And interestingly, a life-changing moment for me realizing this was when I was on my exchange program in the United States. We were in the tri-state area, Washington, Maryland, and DC, for about 2 weeks. And we, as a football club from Pakistan, we were taken to different football clubs in the United States and different spaces where football or soccer was practiced. So we went to a camp for children under three. We went to a Robinson Rams high school football games. We saw George Mason University play. So at all different levels, we saw recreational soccer being done in the communities. We also saw a women's professional soccer game between the Chicago Red Stars and Washington Freedom. And on our last day, when we were coming back to Pakistan, they took us to a camp for autistic children. So just an afternoon camp where children come and just kind of have a chance to kick the ball around. And you know how it is with children with learning disabilities. They can have different behavioral traits. And you just saw them taking that energy out. And for a moment, you saw the parents sitting on the sides just relax. And I spoke to the volunteers. We got a chance to volunteer with the kids. And the feedback that I was getting was, this is just these 1.5 or 2 hours of peace that parents of such children can have while these children are in a safe space and are able to do something to get that energy out, because it can be very, very demanding to be a parent of a child that you know is dealing with autism or is on a spectrum. And that's when I was like, wow, this is so powerful. And I came back to Pakistan, and you know, like I said, that's when I decided that I want to study this, because people are using this as a tool. It's a medium. It's much more. And I'm so glad I came across Sport for Development.
Wow, it's an amazing journey that you've had in this space, Sana, and I really appreciate you highlighting just some of those experiences that, as you said, really set you on this path and probably gave you those moments of either validation or excitement or just this really makes sense. Like, sport can really do this. In Pakistan, you were connecting the dots, observing that women took up their space really differently in this positive way with this confidence. And then you went on to study it and you studied self-esteem and connected it to sport. I just think that's really incredible. I'm wondering, in light of all of those really incredible opportunities you had, in reflecting, what do you think allowed you to secure all of those opportunities, or to open those doors, especially at the international level and the education level?
I think a lot of it has to do with being at the right place at the right time. So you have to give it to luck. But then you also have to be good at what you do or true to what you do. So, you know, some people can get lucky, but then they might stop after a few opportunities. And others, you just need to grab that opportunity and make the best of it. And I think because I was coming from a place of, I really believe in this, I went after things aggressively. And I tried to convince the people that I was speaking to. And I carry that with me even today. As a program manager at Right to Play, I'm involved in a lot of fundraising. So, you know, when I speak to potential donors, when I'm at fundraising events, my mission is to tell them that this works. I have lived it, and you have to take my word for it. Just trust me. And, you know, I will share with them the genuine stories of change that I've seen with my own eyes. And I think it's just really having that power to go after something you believe in. And I think that anybody else from a field would agree that if you believe in something and you go for it, then these opportunities just keep coming to you. And just like you have reached my mailbox one day, and you and I have connected, it's because you've been feeling passionately about this field and I've been working on it, and you know, today we're crossing paths. So I think it's about staying consistent and true to what you do, and opportunity to just keep coming.
quick break here with a special message from your host. This episode is being released in celebration of the United Nations recognized International Day of Sport for Development and Peace, which takes place annually on April 6th. Each year, champions of the sport for development sector use this day to raise awareness of the incredible work that individuals and organizations are leading across the globe to leverage the potential power of sport and play to drive tangible impact and positive social change. I hope that listeners, whether an enthusiast, a skeptic, or a novice in this space, that you find the conversations I facilitate on the Inspira podcast to be informative and inspirational. If you enjoy this podcast, you would be a rock star if you went ahead and gave it a 5-star review with a complimentary written sentence or two on Apple Podcasts or your chosen podcast platform. Enjoy listening and happy April 6th, everybody. Well, let's talk a little bit more about Right to Play. While it's a massive player in this sector, I'm wondering, Sana, if you can describe the organization's mission and activities to the audience members who are maybe less familiar.
Right to Play is a Canadian nonprofit organization. And yes, as you mentioned, I believe it is a global pioneer in the sport for development field. And it's been working for over 20 years now on creating sport-based youth development programs for the most marginalized and under-resourced communities across the world. Predominantly, our work has been in Middle East, Africa, and Asia, including Pakistan and Thailand. We are also founded by a Norwegian Olympian, a speed skater, who has been fortunate enough to win 4 Olympic gold medals. And he is known by Johan Olof Koss. You may be familiar with him. And it was his passion, or it was his one visit to a country, a newly independent African country, Eritrea, I believe, as part of one of his Olympic aid missions. And while he was there taking sport equipment to the children of this country, he realized that, they had just come from war and conflict, and perhaps these people needed other things like food and shelter and basic amenities, and perhaps not sport equipment. So he found himself apologizing to the president to say, I brought this, but I think you needed other things. And the president responded that we have people doing that for us, but in the process, they have forgotten that we are human beings. So while we do have food and clothing and shelter, what people don't realize is the trauma that our whole community and our country has been through and what our children have been through. And so at this time, we need somebody to recognize them as human beings. And so sports equipment is exactly what they need. They need hope back in their lives, and they need a reason to keep going. And sports will do that for us. And that is what Johan's motivation became for founding Right to Play. And I think that story is so beautiful because that it's so true, and that has lived on in all of the people who have come after Johan and who are in our leadership as well. And that trickles down to each of those implementing country offices, including myself. In Pakistan, we've been operational since 2008. And again, it started as an intervention with Afghan refugee children because of the Afghan crisis and a lot of immigrants moving to our country. And because the need for those children at that time was play-based psychosocial support programs. And later on, it developed into the same kind of program for flood-affected communities in Pakistan or internally displaced communities. And over time, it has evolved into a long-term development program for the most under-resourced children across the country, predominantly in the provinces of Sindh and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa, and with some programs in the capital city of Islamabad. We work majorly in partnership with government education systems and the provincial education departments, because the government schools are the mainstream education system, and that's where you find the majority of children. And unfortunately, these children come from low middle income families, so they don't have those kind of opportunities anyway. Schools are under-resourced. Teachers are not up to the mark in terms of the quality of teacher training or quality of teaching. The student teacher ratio is horribly in not in the favor of teachers, and so they're overburdened, and primary focus then lies on just attaining educational outcomes, with all of the extracurriculars or sport or anything outside of the classroom being neglected. So Right to Play comes in and offers that play-based and sport-based development program that offers a comprehensive approach to child development. So and even though in the beginning we face a lot of resistance, over time we have built that trust with the government to know that it's not a waste of time, it's not a waste of resources, and they have seen the impact on their children. We like to do more long-term programs, so up to 3 to 4 year programs. And as you know, with sport for development, you are trying to create some sort of change, and change cannot happen overnight. So it cannot be one-off events. It cannot be a tournament, a championship. Yes, those things are great. Those are great to continue the momentum and celebrate the things that we've been doing. But essentially, our work is day to day with our coaches going into these schools and leading these structured, intentional, play-based activities. We have a set of variety of resources catered to different age groups. So for primary age children, middle school, and then we have a youth leadership development program for older children. And all of these are include an activity followed by a reflection discussion. So again, trying to be more purposeful about the learning that they derive. Children will play a game, they're encouraged to reflect, talk about it, what they learned, what they didn't, observations, and then connect those life skills, essential things like communication, teamwork, strategy, conflict resolution, anger management, emotional management. All of that to real life situations, and then see how they can apply that in the future in off the field situations. And over time, we feel like participation in such activities leads to positive gradual behavior change and helps them become more well-rounded individuals with a set of life skills that will be essential to them wherever they go.
I'm wondering a little bit more about how the gender context and the realities for girls and women influence how Right to Play programming takes shape in Pakistan. And you've talked about this a little bit already, especially by educating us on that cultural context and examples of how sport impacts women differently than men. And I'm wondering this because I remember one thing you mentioned to me, Sana, the last time we spoke was that how mere access to sport can actually have similar outcomes as sport for development programs for female empowerment. Would you be able to speak a little bit more about that idea?
Yes, definitely. In a country like Pakistan, sport in general is underdeveloped. So even men's sports are struggling to make it out there. And as a British colony, cricket is predominantly played across the whole country, and men's cricket, and then after men's cricket, women's cricket is given importance. All other sports are very underdeveloped, and so access to them becomes even more difficult, especially for girls. In that situation, just being on a playing field, women talking about the empowering experience of playing is so different than the experience of a man. Perhaps a boy who has that access to just step outside of his house and play cricket in the streets. Pakistan is a country of boys playing cricket in the streets everywhere you go. But girls don't have that kind of freedom or luxury. And it's not safe, and parents don't allow it, and they just don't have the freedom to go out and do this. So simply providing them a safe space for them to experience their bodies in a more physical way, and in a more comfortable environment, well, we have seen it work wonders. And when Right to Play in Pakistan saw that difference and saw that our programs were having this amazing impact on just girls, we started focusing our attention towards more female-focused programs. And I think in the last 6 years, we've had so much all-girls programming, working in all-girls schools, and focusing on just creating more access and opportunities for girls in sport. We now have that as our strategic vision, and it's one of the key thematic areas of our programming. And as part of our vision for the next 5 years, we want to reach even more girls across the country and create even more opportunities for them to not only learn the essential life skills, but have greater agency over their lives. And that's what we've seen our programs doing.
Thank you. I understand while at Right to Play, you've been involved with a randomized data study that looked at positive impact and a secondary impact on coaches and leaders. I'm wondering if you can share more about that study and what it taught you.
Yes, I'm excited to talk about this because people who work in this field know that there's limited research. A lot of the evidence that we have is anecdotal, and we have experiences. Even in the academic articles that I've read, a lot of it is based on the athlete experience. And that's how we've come to these conclusions that it is really empowering for girls to play sport. But Right to Play has contributed to this dearth of information with this great randomized control trial results that we had from one of our programs. We with the support of the British government, we were implemented a program from 2015 to 2018 in the city of Hyderabad in Sindh province in Pakistan. And it was part of the larger What Works to Prevent Violence Against Women initiative by the UK government. So trying to figure out what strategies work, what works to reduce violence and abuse against women. And they had allotted these grants to different organizations across the world with different methodologies, and also hired a team of a consortium of researchers to conduct scientific research on these various methodologies to see what works. And so a group of researchers from the Aachen Medical Aachen University, South African Medical Research Council, and I believe Texas Women's University conducted an RCT on Right to Play intervention schools alongside 20 control schools. So a total of 40 schools, just to see what the impact of Right to Play's play-based programs were. And they found statistically significant results to show that after 120 play sessions over the course of 2 years, these children exhibited greater life skills and the reduced bullying in both peer perpetration and victimization. So essentially, children who were bullying less. Children who were being bullied less. And resultantly, anxiety scores reduced, depression reduced, frustration reduced, and all of these negative emotions that had earlier been captured as very high in the baseline, they all were reduced at the end of our program. Because the program also focused on positive masculinity, we saw the transformation of gender norms or the belief and perceptions around gender stereotypes amongst boys and girls. And so the study actually shows that play-based learning or the information passed on was not only restricted to the child, the children were going and sharing that information at the household level in some way or the other, within their communities, with their parents, with their cousins, with their siblings. And so over time, what was happening was perhaps a reduction of violence at home because the incidence of violence that children witnessed were also reduced. So fathers fighting with other men in the community, father fighting with the mother, that had also reduced as per the end line results. And that's very positive information. Our whole thesis was around the fact that we will work on peer violence and bullying amongst children, both between boys and girls, because violence is essentially a cycle. And if you curtail it early on, then these people are less likely to become perpetrators in the future. And so that data was picked up by the team and published in various international journals as well, and taken up by the project leads to recommend to WHO as one of the seven strategies that have worked to curb violence against women. So I think that that's one of our major achievements as an organization. And I think also a huge contribution to the field of sport for development research.
That's incredible. Yeah, I agree with what you said when you preface that study, just that sometimes we rely so heavily on anecdotes or our own lived experiences. So to have that data, especially because it was randomized, is really useful. And then just the results. I mean, what you described is how the impact goes beyond the individual, goes beyond the young person. It impacts their family. It impacts the behavior of those in their circle is just really exciting. And on that note, on that exciting note, are there any success stories of inspiring individuals or examples that you've encountered through your work that really confirm this impact, this positive impact of sport for development programs?
Yes, definitely. If you get me talking about the stories, I think I would be here all night. Just because I'm fortunate enough to have worked directly with the children. And in the kind of work that we do, I think you cannot do that without being on the field. So I've visited the schools, I've met with the people, and every person has their own wonderful, amazing story. Because as I said, we're working with marginalized communities. So for them to the struggle to just survive the next day, even that is inspiration in itself. That's a huge challenge for them. So communities that are displaced every now and then, who are harassed, who are not able to benefit from economic opportunities, who are in different kind of working class, they have so many challenges of just putting food on the table, that for their children to show up at school is an achievement of it in itself. And when these children come to school, I think that they're making the best of what they have because they know the value of it. And so when we offer this sport program, they really, engage with it. And they are provided that opportunity because these children are neglected so long that they want to be seen. And so what sport is doing is allowing a platform for them to voice their opinion. And I was lucky enough to meet a girl in one such experience where we had to take a delegation to represent Pakistan in the FIFA Foundation Festival in 2018 in Russia, which is organized alongside the FIFA World Cup. And the idea was to participate in a week-long football for development space with international delegations and children from all these sport for development programs across the world. And so we really wanted the children to be able to make an impact and to share their stories with people across the world. And in one such interview, I came across this young girl, Kamal, from a minority Christian community in Islamabad, who said she dreamt of being a reporter because she saw the injustice and she saw the problems with communities, and she wanted to bring, light to it and tell the world about the challenges that they face. And I just saw this aspiration in her. And we took her along. Not only was she a great ambassador for Pakistan, she wasn't the greatest football player, by the way, but what she had was heart. And she was able to make friends with people there. And when she came back, all she talked about was, I want to be a coach one day. This is what I want to do. And not to say that her reporter dreams are behind her, but she has become so passionate about creating change for girls. She volunteers her time. She makes sure that after school hours, she gets a group of girls together, plays with them. It was her insistence in one of the focus group discussions I had with children to see what their needs were during programming that she said, "You know what? Girls are ready to play. We want to play. We see the value. It's just that we don't have a safe space." So we don't have a boundary wall outside our school. We all often have strange men outside. It's not safe. We have passersby. We have people, taking their donkey carts and their motorcycles through the ground, and we're not able to go outside and play. And with that, we were able to raise enough funds and build them a temporary wall. And the next time I visited, the boys from that school said, "You know what? We don't get space on the playground anymore because the girls have taken over." And I think that all has to be owed to Kaval and her persistence and her motivation, because that's what sustainability is. You have to inspire the young leaders in the communities for them to take this forward, because we don't have the resources and in development programs, and we don't have that vision either to be there forever. You know, it's to build that sense within the community to understand and to own it. And that's exactly what I've seen Kamal do. And now that she's above 18, and finally we decided to take her on board as a right to play volunteer coach. And so she gets paid a little stipend as well. And I see the whole kind of story coming full circle, because here was this girl who started off with nothing, and she had these challenges in her mind, and she had this, you know, having a history of being a minority in this country, several personal incidents for which her family had to relocate. And now she's this champion in her community who is owning sport, who is getting more girls involved, who is talking to their mothers, getting them to school as well. And she's just an inspiration. She has changed her life around, and you know, she's that beacon of hope that I see.
And with that example and the other examples you've shared so far, you've highlighted some really key ingredients to success, especially with programming. You just mentioned the importance of sustainability and local ownership. And throughout our conversation, you've highlighted the importance of having physical space to play, especially for young girls. And in addition to that research and impact study piece. And so, on this note of keys to success, I'm wondering if there's any lessons that you've learned that you think may be helpful for other sport for development professionals working in this space.
Yes, definitely. I think I would go back to the sustainability piece that, you know, when you're in it, it's easy to see that it's working and it's great. But I think what we need to start thinking about many times is, hey, but how is this going to continue after we've exited? And that was a lesson from a lot of the programs that I felt like, I'm not so satisfied with what we did, because even though it was great, I'm not able to capture the impact after us. And I don't even know the extent of what's going to continue. So, you know, try to focus a bit more on, hey, let's work on the impact studies, let's work on a sustainability plan. And you know, we have all of that when we design the program, but it just needs to be more robust. So the lesson from that is, let's come up with real practical steps. Even if your sustainability plan has one element to it instead of five, perhaps it's better, but that one should be really, really strong to, you know, keep the whole thing going. Sometimes we tend to do, of course, in these development programs and in order to secure funds, to be very honest, sometimes you have to tell donors the things that they want to hear. And I feel like it's all right sometimes to do that, because we understand that we need to get the necessary funding in place. But for our own sake, it has to be sustainable to an extent. So even if it's one small aspect of it, it matters. And I've seen that in right to play programs, as I mentioned, the concept of a volunteer coach, there's ideally a youth member from the community, a male or female, depending on the children that they're working with, and able to understand the context of that community as well. So speaks the same language, and again, is a youngster with more energy, and ideally somebody who feels strongly about this work as well. We get them on board, pay them a little kind of honorarium to cover their transport expenses, keep them incentivized, and teach them and train them on our resources and the essential other topics of safeguarding and equality and inclusion, and all the necessary steps on how to be a good sport for development coach, and make sure everybody's participating, and make sure you can modify the games to incorporate all children of all varying abilities and backgrounds. So these coaches, over time, what I've experienced, become great individuals in themselves. They have their own success stories. And the best part is, because they are already active volunteers or active youth members in the community, that added knowledge helps them make more change. So they are the pillars of sustainability of our programs. And I find that even after we've gone, these coaches live on. The information lives on, the trainings, all of that they have gained and their experience with Right to Play really helps them be role models and change agents. And I've seen that with Right to Play programs ending in a city, and even after 3, 4 years of intervention, we are we are still seeing the young leaders working, continuing to do this. So I think it has so much to do with inspiring that person in that community, whether it's a government stakeholder, whether it's a parent, whether it's a local coach, whether it's a school teacher. But if you inspire the ones in charge, then they'll be the ones to take it forward. And you have to convince them. So take that time to convince them. Sometimes we're focused on just the children, just the immediate beneficiaries or the target beneficiaries of our project. Sometimes we're just focused on numbers, getting the right outputs. But I think it's very worth it to invest that extra time on all these other actors and get them to believe in the work and share with them the results. So oftentimes we even make our communications material catering to the donors or perhaps a larger audience, which is potential donors. But we seldom reflect back to the community our learnings. So that's very important. Going back to the parents and going back to the school and saying, hey, you know what? We've been working in your school for this many years. This is what the children are saying. These are the stories. This is what the survey says. This is what the online data shows. And you guys have seen it too. So it allows them to have more ownership. And I think investing the time in that is important for sustainability.
Now that we know more about our guest's career journey, the rest of our conversation will allow us to have some fun and get to know our guest on a personal level through some rapid-fire questions. We'll then start to wrap up with pointed questions focused on advice and how our listeners can transform interest into action. Enjoy the rest of the conversation. What is your favorite food?
Chocolate. I know
Ooh.
that isn't food, right? But that
Oh, it
came to
is to
mind.
me. That's very embraced in this conversation. What kind of chocolate?
Ideally, milk chocolate or white chocolate, anything but dark chocolate. So, you know,
Me too. People don't understand.
real sugar.
Exactly. Do you have a favorite sports memory?
Oh, yes, I do. I was talking about it just the other day. It was a game. It was a semifinal game, so it was a knockout game. And of course, it was very important to us because just the last year, we didn't make it to the finals. So this year, we were like really aiming for it, and we were down 1-0. We were down 1-0 in the game, and with 10 or 12 minutes left, I could see eventually our team getting desperate. You know, you start to lose it. There's a bit of chaos, and you're just feeling like this is out of our hands now. It's slipping away. I even see some players with tears in their eyes. So we're kicking the ball, we're shouting at each other, but we're emotional and we're almost crying like we're going to lose this title. And all of a sudden, like a miracle from God, we get this penalty. And we, you know, our player takes it. We are 1-1 now. And the whole morale changes just with that penalty score. The tears are gone. It's more like aggression, like we've got this, you know, and everybody's motivating each other, like we're still in the game, so let's fight it. And with all these this attack on the opposition, we're making great chances, and that's building the pressure. And eventually we get a free kick, which we convert into a goal. And here we are leading 2-1, and the tears have turned to like tears of joy. My parents on the stands and all the other players, the soccer moms, as we call them here too, with their dupattas, their Quran, their prayers, and you know, their cheers as well. And that's it. We heard the final whistle, and we knew it. We were in the finals, and I think that was the greatest example of how sport can represent a whole life. Because it took us through so many different emotions in just the last 10, 12 minutes. And it was heart-wrenching and it was chaotic. And I think that's what life can be sometimes. And living that experience, that intense experience, really made me feel like, wow, this is incredible. And we were overjoyed.
I love how you related that to life so deep. Thank you, Sana. That's an incredible memory that you kept so vividly. I'm very impressed. Do you have any hobbies or interests that just don't have anything to do with sport that you really like to do?
I was immediately going to say I enjoy going on long walks and long hikes, and I was like, no way, that's sort of linked, so I'll keep it to a completely different. I do enjoy reading, so I like to read, and and I think that one can get so busy in their life that often reading is neglected, but it's something that I enjoy so much that when I start, it's so hard to put down a book, and I can imagine myself in a whole world, and because of that, I love to write as well. So I've recently started a blog, and I'll chip away at some blog entries, and I'm really happy to come across people like you who have transferred that kind of love for writing and blogging, and recording to do all of this. So I appreciate that, and I think because of all these rich memories and rich experiences, I want to put them down on paper as well. And I'm passionate about writing, and I hope to take that further. Yeah.
Well, I support you writing an autobiography or a documentary someday. I am sure the experiences that you've amassed can fill those pages or fill those scenes with so much color. So that's exciting. And Sana, in terms of advice, what advice might you give to someone out there who is really dreaming of breaking into the sport for development and peace sector?
I think I would say, don't be hesitant. In the beginning, it looks like but there's a lot of opportunity. And I think I would encourage people, especially from other fields. You don't have to necessarily be from a humanitarian or a development background or from the social sciences to work in this field. I found that my athlete experience really helped bridging that gap. When I came to Right to Play, I felt that there was a totally different world of the education through sport, and there was a complete disconnect with the athletes. Though at the international level, at Right to Play internationally, there were a lot of athlete ambassadors on board, but I feel like sometimes we tend to lose that connection. And it's so important because it's important for athletes to know the development aspect of it, and they can act as role models and reinforcers of the impact of sport. So I encourage people from, the pro sport industry, sports marketing and sports media, and so many other professional sports programs, or people with experience running elite sport development programs, to come here and offer their expertise. And it'll be a more enriching experience as well. And I encourage the sport for development group to invite those people in for these meaningful conversations. So I think that's something very important to me, and that I've seen in my career, and I think we could benefit from a lot of that.
Sana, how can our audience support you or your work?
So Right to Play International is a global nonprofit, and you can visit their website, www.righttoplay.com. You will see a bunch of different and inspiring stories there to make you more of a believer if you aren't already, and various options to donate. Particularly now, if you all are familiar, Pakistan suffered the greatest kind of catastrophe in its recent years with the floods of August 2022. And that has caused a huge loss to millions of people across the country, and in many of the Right to Play locations, or the locations that we were working in. We have seen communities devastated, children in trauma, and so we have initiated a play for psychosocial well-being program to reinstore that hope and to get children back to schools. And so every penny counts, every co small contribution that you can make would be really helpful. And all of that information is on the page.
Perfect. Well, my final question that I love to ask all of my amazing guests, and that I invite you to answer in any language that you're comfortable, is who or what inspires you?
This has to be a cliche, and I don't know if a lot of people say it, but here I go. I will answer for all the lovely young girls in sport that inspire me every day. And I would like to talk to them in Urdu, which is the majority language here in Pakistan. तो वो तमाम बच्चियां जो खेल में हिस्सा लेती हैं और अपने लिए वो मौके ढूंढती हैं, मैं उनको कहना चाहूंगी कि इस पर कभी आप हार मत मानिए। जो खेल और जो स्पोर्ट आपको दे सकता है जिंदगी में, वो मेरा ख्याल है आपको कोई और चीज नहीं सिखा सकती। और एक औरत होने की वजह से खेल में आना और खेल से जो चीज हम सीखते हैं और खेल से जो हम अपनी स्पेस को और अपनी एजेंसी को आगे लेके चलते हैं, वो मेरी अपनी जिंदगी में मुझे बहुत काम आई है। और मैं मुझे उम्मीद है कि आपके लिए भी बहुत जरूरी होगी। और इस एनर्जी को देखते हुए और आपका पैशन देखते हुए मेरी इंस्पिरेशन है कि मैं ये काम करती रहूं। सो इट्स ऑल थैंक्स टू द गर्ल्स इन दीज प्रोग्राम्स हु आर ओवरकमिंग चैलेंजेस एवरी डे एंड यू नो मेकिंग दैट एफर्ट टू कम टू द प्लेइंग फील्ड। That's my inspiration because that motivates me to continue the work that I'm doing and convince other people to keep doing this work because it matters.
Thank you so much, Sana. I really appreciate your time, your insights, and your inspiration. And I'm wishing you all the best in your next steps moving forward.
Thank you, Erica. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed being here and it was a lovely conversation. I love meeting other sport for development enthusiasts and good luck to you with this podcast and all the other amazing things that you're doing in this field.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Inspira podcast with Erica Mueller Chen. I really hope you enjoyed the episode and found it useful. Be sure to check out the show notes for links and resources. Specifically, my link tree is there with tons of awesome information. Feel inspired to take action today? I've got three action steps you can take right now because you know your girl likes calls to action and the number three. So here goes. Number one, sign up for my mailing list by adding your email address. Number two, check out my global resource hub and send it to someone in the sector who may be interested. Number three, buy me a coffee. Or, if you know me, this will actually be a hot cocoa. Your support will help make sure this passion project prospers. All of these links are available by visiting my link tree. Until next time, stay inspired.